I'm Dream Queen. You're in the cab with me, and I'm here with Kellyanne from Midnight Ideas, which airs Monday evenings at 7 to 8. Right here, Mountain Time. Thanks so much for being here again.
Of course. Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Yes. My pleasure. You were here a couple weeks ago, and people can find the archive of that show on In the Cab Radio at Linktree or In the Cab Radio on Mixcloud and anywhere that you get podcasts, because I know everybody can't catch it live. And you brought so many gifts here. Like, your presence is beautiful and it elevates me, and I just so appreciate your energy. And also the insight that you brought to this work. Mm. You illuminated the whole angle. Like, I was like, oh, he's dying.
Yeah, he's on his way out.
He's like peacing out. Yeah. So, and what brings it all together, the culmination is the farewell. He's saying goodbye to everyone. For those of you who aren't familiar with Khalil Gibran's The Prophet, it's 100 years old last year, and actually 101 in 2004. And 2024, it turned 101 years old. It's in public domain. You can find it online. My favorite place to go is khalilgibran.com. It's managed by the Khalil Gibran Collective, and there's people dedicated to keeping his work alive. And there are many essays and think pieces and breakdowns of Gibran's work, his artwork, and his writings. And The Prophet, his most popular piece, I believe, follows Al-Mustafa, a wise person in the town of Orphalese, who's apparently dying. I've been setting this whole series up for like 6 months that he's just getting on a boat. And now we got circle back, y'all. I mean, you know, that's the thing about poetry. It's on so many levels, yeah. Right? He got me. He got me with the hook. And so on his way down to the shore to meet his, what do we call that? Where Karen comes and takes the ferrymen.
Yeah, the ferrymen. He calls them the seafarers who wait to meet him.
Yes.
To me, that's, you know, the people who have already passed from his life into the spirit world. They're there.
And Gibran tells us he's going back to the place of his birth. Mm-hmm. I believe we're looking at, in the coming of the ship, the opening. And we're just going to bring it back because I like to tell people who are new to the show or new to the book club. I'm going to read this first paragraph. Al-Mustafa, the chosen and the beloved, who was a dawn unto his own day, had waited 12 years in the city of Orphalese for his ship that was to return and bear him back to the isle of his birth. Mm-hmm. Okay? I mean, it says he's just going back to where he came from. Oh! Okay. And so, you know, then the gates of his heart were flung open and his joy flew far over the sea. That's when he looked seaward and beheld his ship coming through the mist. And he closed his eyes and prayed in the silences of his soul. So this, you know, so people, I mean, I wasn't far off base by just thinking this is an old guy, a person who's walking down to the water, and the people put down their work. And they begin to follow him down to the seawall. And the priestess comes out of the temple. And everyone asks him to stay, but he says he cannot. And it's with sorrow that he's leaving. And they ask him to impart his wisdoms before he leaves so that they may pass it on to they may keep it themselves and pass it on to their children. And it will never be forgotten. And they say, now, therefore, disclose us to ourselves and tell us all that has been shown you of that which is between birth and death. And he answered, people of Orphalese, of what can I speak save of that which is even now moving within your souls? So, you know, Kellyanne comes in and is like, yeah, people put down everything because that's what you do when someone you love is dying. Mm-hmm. And then we ask them real quick before they go to give us our final gifts of wisdom and sight.
And something else that I really love from the intro, one of the elders says to him, "Suffer not yet our eyes to hunger for your face." And that just hits so hard when you think of, like, you know, sometimes whenever you're really deep in grief, and suddenly it's hit me before, like, I can't see their face. I'm feeling all this grief, but oh my goodness, I cannot picture their face right now. But it comes back, you know. But they're saying, like, we're not ready to not to miss your I miss your face. But yeah. Like, that just hits different whenever you think about it in a context of the final parting.
Yes, and it's time before photographs.
Yes.
And iPhones. Yes. Go not yet away from us. In noontide have you been in our twilight, and your youth has given us dreams to dream. I'm just going to let you lead here and pick up where you want to begin. Travis was in last week, and we took it from his perspective and rolled along there. And I was in grief at that time for the world and the times that we live in. Mm. And he walked in on me having a bad day, kind of like what you just did. I'm sorry, y'all. It's getting just so crazy out here. And I feel like where the elders, you know, the ancestors, when you were on last, we spoke of your father and his time that you got to spend with him before he crossed over, and how, you know, we've both experienced visitations. Mm-hmm. But it's not enough. Like, what can we... I feel like right now, I'm not going to talk too much about that, but, you know, dreams to dream and wisdom to keep going, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So bring it.
Okay. I'll try. So on the topic of dreams, you know, he mentions dreams so often throughout this book. And in the farewell, he also mentions the wind again. So on my last appearance here in the cab, I talked about how the wind is sort of referenced as the greater spirit world, and our breath, when we breathe that wind, that's our corporeal form getting the spirit within us, you know. And so as our breath leaves us, we return to spirit. And something that is mentioned in the farewell, he says, "People of Orphalese, the wind bids me leave you." So he's feeling that call from the greater, the spirit realm. So he's like, when the wind calls, you can't ignore it. You know, that's, it's your time. So less hasty am I than the wind, yet I must go, he says. And then he goes on to say, "We wanderers ever seeking the lonelier way begin no day where we have ended another day, and no sunrise finds us where sunset left us. Even while the earth sleeps, we travel." And again, I feel like that is part of the tapping into other realms while you sleep. Because, you know, it's a wild thing. Every night we transcend space and time. Like, that's something to behold in itself. Just to sit with that thought and think how awesome that is, and what a gift it is to be able to speak with the people who have passed. I mean, I've had dreams where I'm with my loved ones who have passed on, and I can tell the difference between, for me, a visitation dream and just a dream where I'm working on something in my subconscious that involves them as like an archetype in my life. And it's usually whenever I'm just working through something, I don't realize that they're dead when I'm dreaming about them. And they don't know that they're dead. And we're just having a time, you know, just doing things we used to do. Or like when I dreamt of my dad, not in a visitation, but he was young again and he was healthy again. He was at his strongest and healthiest that I know. You know, there was surely a time when he was younger before I came around when he was stronger and healthier too. But, you know, I woke up from that dream and it's like you grieve all over again.
Mm-hmm.
Because those dreams, you forget that they ever died. But for me, like a visitation dream, you're very aware that you have in this special moment with them that you that they know and you know, and then you're talking to each other about Well, I mean, my friend, Wes. I'm going to talk about him for a minute. Yes,
okay. Was this the friend that you wanted to talk about in the first show and yeah. we ran out of time? Yes, mm-hmm. please.
So we met in kindergarten, and he passed away when he was like 2 weeks shy of his 27th birthday. It was sudden. It was unexpected. And I was living in England at the time. And I had sent my passport off for a visa renewal, so I couldn't even travel back to be at the funeral. So, and you know, I feel like I've mentioned it on the previous show, every passing changes you. It changes your relationship with death, your attitude towards death, and the grief is unique. And that one, I would call that what psychiatrists call complicated grief, where you just don't shake it. There was a lot of anger involved. You know, they say the different stages of grief or whatever. I was pretty stuck in anger for a while. But I feel like I woke up every day and grieved him all over again. And until, I think it was about 2 years into that, and 2 years after he passed, I had a dream that was very, I would have dreams of him. And wake up and grieve him all over again. But the visitation dream from him, that changed my attitude completely about death. Because he very explicitly told me, you gotta let me go. Wow. This is, you know. That dream will sit with me forever. So I was, do you want to hear the full,
yes.
the full dream? I mean, I'll tell it.
Yes, come on, okay. We got time.
All right, so... it's either early, very early morning where it's still blue, or very, very late evening where it's the sun is down and it's blue. So either way, it's sort of twilight. And I was walking outside and the wind is just whipping and I'm weeping and I'm screaming and I can't even hear the words coming out of my mouth, but the wind is just taking it.
Again,
there's the wind.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
The spirit world.
Okay. So and so I'm walking along this grassy field, and there's like a foot beaten track through the grass, and I follow this path, and it circles around this mound that's sort of silhouetted in the blue, and as I circle around it, it dives lower to where I'm partially underground. And the wall is sort of to my right. It sort of spirals around this mound. And then I'm facing a door, this huge door that sort of goes into the base of this mound. And I'm banging on the door and I'm trying to get, I can't see any way to open it. And I'm screaming like, you gotta let me in, you gotta let me in. And the door just opens. And as I step in, it's like a maze, but it's only about hip height. And there are other people in this maze, I can see them in the distance, and it's like stone, it's the best way I can describe it, is like a maze, a labyrinth, and I feel this determination and this drive just pulling me in, and I, you know, just go with it, and as I'm walking, trying to find my way through this maze, it's just high enough that you can tell, you know, that you're stuck, but you can't see a way over it, you know? And I see towards the back of this giant sort of earthen-walled room, my friend Wes. And he sees me, and there's like a sort of portal with a window to it. Not like glass window, but just an open half window from the end of the maze. And I'm calling out to him, and I can see his mouth moving, and I can't hear anything he's saying. I can't hear any of the other people who are in the room. The room is full of people, and they're all meeting up with other people and talking and stuff. But I'm yelling out to him, and I can see his mouth moving, and he's waving me over, and I can't hear what he's saying. So eventually I do get to him, and once I hug him, I can hear his voice. Once we touch, his voice is there. And he starts going on about, Kellyanne, I'm so happy to see you. You got to know that I'm okay. And and that was like the takeaway of what we talked about, some personal things. But he was like, you got to know that I'm okay. And I was like, but, you know, I just feel so sad. You had so much left to do And he said, I'm okay, and I'm going to show you. So he took out this thing. He sat me down, and he took out this thing. And this way I can describe it as like two pyramids, like a glass or a crystal pyramid stuck together at the base, the square base. And he pulled it apart. So he had effectively one pyramid in each hand. And between that was this mist of a rainbow. And as he pulled that apart, my heart was just flooded with... Well, the best word I can use to describe it is euphoria, but that just diminishes it completely. Nothing I've ever experienced felt that apart from a visitation I had many years later. And that was his way. He was like, so now you know how it feels. He was trying to show me that the sense of just love and euphoria just like rushing through my, I can't even, that's the best way I can describe it. It's just like, it just rushed through my person and took me, took me somewhere else. But it was no thoughts, no words, nothing but that feeling, until he put it back together. And then he said, now you know I'm okay and you got to let me go. And after that, I still miss him and I still talk to him and I cry, but I've learned that, you know, like I was saying in that first show that I was on with you, grief can bind your spirit, the bereft, but it, to me, that was telling me that I was holding his spirit back a bit with my grief. He needed to know that I would be okay. So to me, dreams are weird. I have a lot of really weird dreams, but I really do think that there is something more there. I mean, we've been roaming around the earth for, what, tens of thousands of years?
Yeah,
at least 100 million, 100,000 years.
I was going to say, how old was the first Lucy, I believe, the 5 million years old? Our DNA has been shifting in this for a very long time.
Right. And
I don't know. Now, I think maybe 5 million might be big, but if anybody knows, call 473-9696 if you know how long humans been on the earth.
But for all that science has discovered in our system, anyway, that we recognize now, as far as our history can be traced back in the sciences, there's not much that we know about dreams. And if you try to talk about it with some people, they just sort of, they'll just tell you you're crazy or you're just being foo-foo or whatever. But I really think that there's something more to it.
Well, I tried to Google it, but then it said 115 years old, and I think I put the wrong thing in the search engine. But no, I'm right there with you. Dreams hold a lot of information, and I was just watching something about someone trying to break down synchronicity and Carl Jung's collective unconscious, that what we call coincidence isn't really coincidence. It's just some sort of tapping into a collective, and we're able to manifest and have experiences, think about somebody, and then the phone rings because we share a collective consciousness or unconsciousness that is not tangible or recorded in you know, the internet is the closest mirror to that as we can, you know, I could think about, but it's a connection to all of us.
Yeah.
You know, so you're like, oh, I wonder how Bill's doing. You think about him a couple times, and then the next thing you know, you see him walking down the street. It's like, I was just thinking about you. Just weird things like that, you know, and dreaming is a way to tap into. I'm a little shaken today that I experience dreams that can be prophetic. Or, that's all I can say. And then I wake up and have a conversation with the person that tells me, oh, yeah, I was just about to do that thing, or, you know, have something play out. I don't want to get specific about people's business. You know, it's more than just my personal thing. But more recently, especially since I've cut out alcohol and cannabis, I used to be a regular daily smoker, especially before bedtime. And even though I... it's just unlocked information. You know, I would dream, even if I was drinking and smoking, which is like, yeah, I dream and I know things and I vibe. But since my brain has cleared up from that, it's been the eerie accuracy and the synchronicities has been mind-blowing. And so, you know, there are things that I've dreamed about the collective. We just woke up in full-on anxiety, and I'm like, I don't have a reason for my full body to be anxious as it is right now. And at one point, I pick up my phone. I woke up at 4 a.m., complete anxiety attack. And then I read about the attack on Israel, you know, right as things were starting in this iteration of the attack on Palestine. Mm-hmm. So now it's gotten to the point where I get, you know, I've had a dream and woke up from anxiety, and then there's the retaliation that happened right after that. And then you can think, well, these things are going on in the world. We all feel anxiety, but to just be regular. I mean, like if there's 30 days in a month and I'm fine for 27 of them, and then I wake up on the 28th day in complete overwhelm, and then the news headline is terrorist attack. You know what I mean? You can't help but put that, you know, make a connection. Mm-hmm. You know, and lately it's been more and more unnerving about, you know, just the state of our people on this planet and what we're all going through as we get tighter. I think some of us are being called to pull our loved ones closer because we don't really know what tomorrow's going to bring. Mm-hmm. And so the collective feeling that, and those of us who are aware of these things and are open to dreaming and empathy and, you know, caring for the collective and doing spiritual work, it's becoming pretty intense out here. So I'm vibing with you without trying to say too much. You know, that's for the basement tapes. But, you know, it's wild out here in these dreaming streets. In the dreamscape.
You dream know. Queen.
Yeah, it's yeah. deep. But, you know, and even, you know, with all of that, I was looking at this piece last night, and I'm looking at We Wanderers. I mean, what you just read, ever seeking the lonelier way. Mm-hmm. Begin no day where we have ended another day. And no sunrise finds us where sunset left us. Now, you know, and there's this part of me that is a seeker and a hermit and up here in these mountains. So I'm still looking at this on a mundane level, mundane being earthly, mm-hmm. You know, the ever seeking the lonelier way. What's your take on that, that part specifically? Do you believe that the soul comes here with as an I, or in a, or are we constantly seeking connection? Like, where do you think he's?
So I feel like it's not, you know, the there's like a William Carlos Williams poem about I dance alone, I am alone, I was meant to be alone, I am lonely, and he's celebrating being alone. And that whenever I learned that poem, it reminded me of, you know, that the way you view loneliness, there's like a socially negative connotation to it. But to be truly alone with yourself and to be able to enjoy your own presence is a very special thing. A lot of people struggle with that. And so when I see that bit from the prophet about, you know, we seek the lonely way, the lonesome way, I see, you know, we return to the part of the greater spirit, and as we enter into a new being, you know, we seek, you know, the soul is seeking a unique experience, a unique vantage point to existence. You know, maybe it's because there's still something we need to learn we didn't learn in our first or previous form, but that loneliness isn't necessarily like being completely isolated from other people. In my perspective on this, it's a individual trying to get an individual perspective on a situation, more so than, you know, going off and being a hermit. But people do, you know, when they are trying to achieve, like Leonard Cohen, we played him a couple weeks ago. He spent some time off in the mountains. You know, when they are trying to connect to spirit or connect with what their purpose was in coming here or whatever, we often do retreat to a quieter space so that we can be without distraction and tune in to what, however we feel we can tune in to whatever that goal may be.
Thank you. The metaphor is so deep here, you know. I can see where Cohen has derived from Rumi and Gibran. Mm-hmm. The ability to speak about the spiritual and the physical and have it be seamless. Before right now, I thought it was really cool. And now I just feel really confused. Because I'm frustrated. Like, I'm looking for answers today in life today. Uh-huh. And that's not fair. I want some clarity. But it's true. It is. We are alone, and yet we are part of the whole. Mm-hmm. And I have to share something with you, because my horoscope for today, my day at a glance, says, sit with the loneliness. Mm. And I'm like, come on now. Why has it got to be like that? You know? Your instinct when alone is to call someone, anyone. The crowd's applause drowns out a crucial voice, your own. Yeah.
Yes.
This emptiness isn't your enemy. It's the stage where your real story begins.
See?
I got to go to bed. I can't. I like your aha face.
Well, you know, going on about dancing alone with himself and being at joy with that, you know, like... You know, the greater crowd can drown out the message that you need to hear for the day or the moment.
And that's, you know, I don't want to get too far. Good Lord, it's already 9:34. but you're helping me pick apart my own recent dreaming, like I was just sharing about, because there is something jarring. I have many nights of fine dreaming where it is me connected to my own mind or needing the information that I need or just peace, you know what I mean? And then there is that part where the crowd is like, hey, look at me, like look at the collective. No, you know, and it's part of the work. It's like, it's just really, it's really interesting being aware. And when that jump happens, to be able to stay grounded while being connected.
A challenge of the century.
I mean, yes.
Right? Like, especially, I feel like even in like pretty like typical times, well, I mean, it's probably hard for most people who have one foot in the spirit realm and one foot on the earth to maintain some sort of balance and clarity. But when times, I mean, I'm getting whiplash like every day with stuff, you know? And it's like, we need tenderness more than ever right now. We need kindness and community, but also like, I also feel like I just got to go sit alone and defrag for a while, you know?
And how do you defrag? It's like, I want a nap. And then the nap is like, hey, back to the other side of the realm. And it's like, no, can I just... And then it's back to drinking and drugging because it's like, I need the voices to stop. But no, that's, you know... But I mean, really, though, how many mystics... I still contend that Nina Simone was misdiagnosed. I mean, the High Priestess of Soul, full-on Pisces. I haven't done her whole chart, but I believe that she was... Her work was calling in spirit and channel and raising Cain, and it came off as it manifests as bipolarism. Mm-hmm. and one foot on each side will drive you batty. She did good work, and at the same time, people didn't understand.
No.
You know, so when we're like, okay, I'm just going to chill and make some art, and then your art is actual conjuring. Through no intention of... The intention is to heal our culture and our society and oneself. But when is the break, really?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so, anyway, sorry, I don't know, I'm going off. We didn't really have this group. Next time we gotta get in those. I don't know, but welcome. Thank you. So where do you want to? Thank you for your insight.
And, of course, you know. Yeah. Thank you for yours as well, because I love your show. I try not to play favorites, but sorry, other KMR DJs.
You're the sweetest.
Yeah, I'm not.
So take me somewhere. Where do you want to go next?
Well, I do want to touch on the how I said, you know, we come back and there's something we didn't finish before.
Yes.
You know, I do believe in reincarnation, and I say believe very loosely because I don't know for sure anything. You know, I feel like that's where faith comes in, and I feel like faith can sometimes behold in you to things that you need to grow away from. I enjoy believing things, but I'm aware that my experiences transform what I believe. But I do believe in some degree of reincarnation. I don't know about everything else that goes along with some of the more organized thought around reincarnation. But something that he says in the farewell as he's leaving, he says, "Fare you well, people of Orphalese, this day has ended. It is closing upon us, even as the water lily upon its own tomorrow. What was given us here we shall keep, and if it suffices not, then again we must come together, and together stretch our hands unto the giver. Forget not that I shall come back to you. A little while, and my longing shall gather dust and foam for another body. A little while, a moment of rest upon the wind, and another woman shall bear me." "It was but yesterday we met in a dream," he goes on to say. "You have sung to me in my aloneness, and I of your longings have built a tower in the sky." To me, that's the connections that we do make. We're all alone as, you know, physical incarnations, and our spirit. We breathe in the spirit. We become who I am here today, who you are there. You know, so that is aloneness in itself. But, you know, together, the connections that we make through that can build beautiful things. I struggle with that. You know, I tend to shy away from, like, collaboration. Mm-hmm. And I know that there's a lot. I mean, I like to work together in groups, you know, and, like, contribute in that way. But, like, when it comes specifically to art, I have a hard time collaborating. You know, did you ever see the movie that I made for the first Madrid Film Festival?
No.
I did all of it. I played like 6 characters plus myself.
I love that.
I filmed it in my living room.
Love it. Yeah,
but Matt did the music. Yeah. But, you know, like but I also wasn't able to do much collaboration because I had Conrad. He was like 18 months old, two years old almost at the time. So I had to. I did it all while he was napping. That's my son. So, yeah, it's just like, but still, like, I don't know. I don't know if it's necessarily like a control thing or if it's just a something I fear. But when I do end up collaborating with others, I'm grateful and I enjoy myself. But, you know, when you do join up with other people who share a vision or willing to participate with you, even if you don't see eye to eye on things, beautiful stuff can happen. And I think that touches on the, you know, the individual sense of, you know, personhood and the single perspective we have as ourselves, but also connecting with other people and building something special together.
Oh, that's so deep. I've been on that with music projects where I learned to play all the instruments, guitar, keyboard, done the production work, you know, the sound editing, every single thing, all me, you know. And then I've also experienced being in bands and things like that, which bring its own complications with personalities and, you know, time conflicts and even collaborations here at the radio station. What's up, my diggity and little creature as well? They love you guys. And that each has its own value. I have grown so much, I believe more as a person working in collaboration. Being in relationship, I think, is, it's just, you don't, we don't see ourselves the way others see us. Mm-hmm. And so we need a mirror, we need a reflection, and so do they. So, you know, this whole, you live, you know, you're born alone and you die alone thing. No, I mean, I'm born to my mom's there, you know, like I'm coming through a very human portal that is also taking care of me in my most weakest state. And same in death. Mm-hmm. I mean, some die alone in a house somewhere, maybe alone. And then other people have nurses and caregivers around them. Sometimes we're at the doorway with EMTs. And I mean, there's lots of ways to go out. But the time that we're coming into this world, we are a spirit working through a portal of another human being. And that introduction shows how important relationship is, mm-hmm. I think. You know, just on the talking about traveling, traversing the worlds. It also brought to mind back to Leonard Cohen, and the Tower of Song is the song I thought about. Where does he say here? It was, but yesterday we met in a dream. You have sung to me in my aloneness, and I of your longings have built a tower in the sky. When you read that, that Cohen song popped into my head. My friends are gone. My hair is gray. I ache in the places where I used to play. I'm crazy for love, but I'm not coming on. I'm just singing to you sweetly from a window in the Tower of Song. And I don't know how the river got so wide. I love you way back when. And that song, I always thought about as aging, clearly because he just says it. But then I think about a farewell, mm-hmm. in that sense. Because the longing and the window from a tower, you can see the people, you see your beloveds there, and you don't. And so that brings to the lines that you wanted to speak about the river and the riverbanks and mm-hmm. the ocean.
Yeah. So in the book, you know, he mentions how the river and the sea are the same. And in that Cohen song, you know, where he talks about the river, you know, river is alluded to a lot in so many poems as an agent of change. Mm-hmm. You know, and something that cannot be stopped, a change that cannot be stopped. And so when we look at it in the sense of the prophet and how he mentions the river being part of the sea, like the river is the change that takes us all to the sea, you know, and that is the transition from life to dying. I found myself rereading the farewell while my kid was in dance class the other day. I was in the parking lot going through this. And I didn't highlight the part in the book, specifically in the farewell, but he mentions the sand and being at the sea. But it reminded me of a poem from,
Edgar Allan Poe, yes, you were saying?
Yes, thank you. Yeah, Edgar Allan Poe. You know, and I'm sure, because he's one of the most famous American poets and authors, but for readers who don't know, he was surrounded by death from a very young age. Pretty much everyone close to him just died. And so I think that really impacted most of his themes. And the poem, Dream Within a Dream, he's standing at the ocean and he's saying his farewell to someone who has passed away. And in the final part of the poem, he says, I stand amid the roar of a surf-tormented shore, and I hold within my hand grains of the golden sand. How few, yet how they creep through my fingers to the deep, while I weep. Oh God, can I not grasp them with a tighter clasp? Oh God, can I not save one from the pitiless wave? Is all that we see or seem but a dream within a dream? And, you know, to me, that speaks of grief. That aligns a lot as well with the people of Orphalese saying to him, don't go yet. You know, they're trying to hold on to him like grains of sand that going to end up in the sea, you know. that agent of change that is the river that takes us there. You know, you can fight it, but it's there. But again, the dream motif, you know, the dream within a dream, like we connect even whenever we we're asleep. Like you can try to go alone to a mountain.
That's what I'm saying. But, turn it off. That's what it's a little creature. Our smile is always be like, I don't believe that we have to, that I'm over on the other side, yeah, just with consciousness trying to talk to y'all still. Like, I just want to have a rest. And I'm like, the truth is, I do believe we get that rest. Mm-hmm. And he's saying here, we get that rest and then we get the call back. Mm-hmm. I remember being at rest it was in a dream. Plant medicine there, mm-hmm, a little mushroomy, and it was very small amount, but I was by the ocean. I was in a very, I would say, haunted place. I was in San Francisco, and that place is a portal. And I was in an apartment that was decorated primarily with mirrors. Like, oh, it was a deep portal time and area. Yeah. Time of change for me. We were still in COVID times. There was a not working fireplace in the living room there it was a very old building in San Francisco. And I just had the tiniest bite of a mushroom chocolate, not very strong medicine, very tiny amount. But all of the things just lined up. And I went to sleep and there was just this gray mist around me. Now, I've since fainted before. And I know that that's what it kind of was like. It was like gray. And I was just consciousness. And it was, I felt very sad. And I said, why are you mad at me? And Spirit was like, we're not mad at you, but you have to go back. And I was like, I don't want to go back. Why are you mad? What did I do? And I was on the verge of tears. Mm. And they were like, you have to go back and guard the gate. Yeah, it was pretty deep. Oh. I had no idea what the heck was going on, but I was so upset.
Yeah.
And then the dream shifted and I was in a lobby that to me was my high school lobby, which the high school I went to was an old Civil War hospital building. It was in D.C., Duke Ellington School of the Arts. The building was not a normal school building that was built to be a school. It had a previous purpose as a Civil War hospital. And so the foyer was more like an atrium. It was just a big open room. And the principal's office and the school office was kind of built in. And I was standing there in this with people coming and going. And I'm like, guard the gate. What, I was supposed to be taking tickets to this planet? Like, I was mad. And it was also like, I was feeling like, you know, because people go through the woo-woo people like, oh, we all choose our experience and we choose our lives. And I always been like, no, we don't. Like, don't tell me, because I don't feel like I chose this. I've been trying to exit since I was a kid, like 11 years old, watching the news was my first suicide attempt. Okay. And I was like, no, like I didn't choose this. And so this dream, I was still mad. I was like, what, am I here to take tickets? And so I go in the office, what was the principal's office? And there was it was dimly lit with amber light. I all of a sudden was in all white. And there were people at a table, a long table. It was a banquet. And they were all in purple. And all of a sudden, I felt relief. I'm getting misty talking about it. I felt relief. And they were smiling at me. And one of them approached me. And I was describing this to someone the other day. Like, she had a hat on that's kind of like Whoopi Goldberg and Star Trek and Next Generation. Yeah. And it was kind of like that purple hat with it's kind of like that. And I was like, okay. I can do this because I was assured that I wasn't alone. Now, these people didn't speak, uh-huh, but I had the feeling that I wasn't to do this alone. Mm. And I woke up from that dream in this apartment in San Francisco. And I was like, I think I just had a pre-life experience. And I totally felt validated to not, you know, let myself be gaslit by new age, you know, people who are just like, oh, you know, spiritual bypass, anything you do, you choose yours, your own fault. And I'm like, no, I was called up and I've been shown every day that I have a purpose and I cannot falter no matter how much I want to put myself at risk in various ways. It's like, you're here, you're on track, you're doing the thing, kind of like with the desire that you have for your friend Wes. Like, you're supposed to still be here. And he's like, I'm good. Like, whatever our journeys are, they're our own. But I do feel like I was resting in the mist. Mm. And I did not want to be woken up to Broadway. And the fact that I was 2 weeks late and my mom had to demand a cesarean also validated yeah. me. Because I was like, I still am not ready yeah. to do this. Yeah. I mean, look at where we are. It's pandemonium. Mm. But also look at the work we're doing with the people that we're doing here. All of you out here in this village, all you listeners, you, Kellyanne, like, I can't wait to kick it. Like, we really need to just kick it. But the work we're doing with each other, and the spirit was right. They're like, get down there, do the work. The world needs you. We're putting you here to do the thing. You have a gift that only you have.
Yeah.
And there's going to be other homies there with you here on this realm and in the spirit realm. There's people out there working with me in spirit, guiding and protecting me. I'm sorry y'all got to work so hard because I keep doing dumb stuff. But thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. I mean, thanks for telling me your experience because I got chills hearing that. And I mean, I would run out of time now, yeah. but I want to hear more about the gate.
I know. Wait till blow your mind on that. Because I've since met someone recently who that's all they, the gate. I'm like, wait, what? And so, yeah. But what I'm understanding is that right now, what I'm going to say in the couple of minutes that we have left is that there is definitely vibes about 1 foot in this world and 1 foot in the other realm. And I don't consider myself a medium, but I do see myself managing, I don't even want to call it dual energies because there's more than two even. But yeah, this world and the other world. And I think part of my work is to help people manage spiritual awakening and myself dealing with that. And, you know, obviously you too. I'm learning so much from you just in these couple hours that we spent together on the air.
Same.
Blown away. Yeah. All right, we're going to come back again.
Yeah.
Okay, and we're also going to just sit somewhere and have a chit-chat.
Yeah.
I'm going to buy you lunch sometime, okay? We got to get out of here. Any final thoughts?
I do not. I feel like this is a good place to end. And I just want to say, you know, even when you feel alone, you're not. To our listeners and to you.
Thank you.
You can never be alone.
You are not alone. Now I want to play Michael Jackson. There's a Mavis Staples too. You were not alone. All right, everybody join for karaoke at some time. Thank you so much, folks, for listening. Thank you, Kellyanne, for being here. Thank you, KMRD, for being here. And thank you, Leonard Cohen, and thank you, Khalil Gibran, and Rumi, and Jesus, and all the ancestors. Mm-hmm. We'll talk to you all again soon. I appreciate you and love you. In the Cab Radio is produced by Jada White, a.k.a. Dream Queen. Original theme music produced by Baby Weekend Boys and Icky Mac the Beat Jugular. Learn more at In the Cab Radio at Linktree. Thank you so much for tuning in.